Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Lynn Buchanan. He was one of the U.S. military's controlled remote viewers from 1984 through 1992. During that time, he worked first as a viewer, then as a database manager, trainer, training officer, and property book officer. Upon retirement, he worked as a computer systems analyst at the Defense Intelligence Agency. He then began his own computer data analysis company called Problem Solution Innovations. He also provides remote viewing services and training to both individuals and organizations, and performs a free public service to police and other public-funded investigative organizations and agencies. Lynn, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
It's fine. How about you?
I'm very good, and thank you so much for joining us. You have led an amazing life, an amazing career, doing things that most people still couldn't fathom are true, let alone that these things have been done by our own military and CIA and military industrial complex. But the things you've done are completely amazing, and they are true. So let's start at the very beginning for you. When did you first realize that you had, I guess you could say, special abilities?
I'm not sure the abilities are special. I think everybody has them to some degree. About when I was about 12 years old, they started coming out. But I just put those away. And they would crop up every now and then. Well, in 1980, early 1983, there was an incident at the field station in Augsburg, Germany, where I was working. And I got just flaming mad over the result, over what happened. And computers started blowing out and everything. That's shown in that movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats and all that. But that came to the attention of General Stubblebine, who was head of the U.S. Army's security, you know, intelligence and security division. And he came out to Augsburg, where I was working a few months later. And he wanted me to be the start of a unit which would destroy enemy computers, and with the end goal, hopefully, of being able to control them so that we could make their missiles fall in the sea or go back and, you know, turn around and go back at them or whatever. And and Congress said no, they wouldn't fund that. And so there I was in D.C. He had nothing to do with me. And so he, you know, he didn't have any place to put me. So he took me out to the remote viewing unit at Fort Meade and put me there. And it was the most fantastic thing I'd ever seen. I thought, really, you can't, you know, the military does this? Couldn't believe it.
What did you see whenever you arrived there?
I'm sorry?
What did you see when you arrived there?
Oh, I saw an old building from World War II that was all run down, really shabby, and they took me in, and they read me on to what they do. Now, a lot of people don't know what that means. Every military unit has things that they do and things that they tell people they do. And when they read you on, if it's a classified unit, they actually hand you a paper. They don't tell you in person. They hand you a paper that you read, and it tells you what the unit actually does. And down at the bottom, it says, now that you have read this, you're responsible, $10,000 fine, 10 years in jail if you ever, you know, and all this. Sign here. And it's not a question, will you sign here? You sign here. And so I signed, and I didn't believe, you know, I didn't believe it at that point. And then I saw the guys work. And I thought, man, this stuff works. And I've got to learn how to do this. And so over the next year, it takes a long time to get really proficient at it. Over the next year, I learned how to do it.
Very interesting. Now, when did our military become involved with remote viewing? Was it because they found out that the Russians were doing it?
Yeah, the Russians had it first. It's one of them where they did have it first. We found out about it. And so they decided, well, you know, everybody had a laugh about it, but then the intelligence field doesn't laugh at things very often. They said, well, hey, if this works, let's find out about it. So they did tests and they found out that it works. And so they formed a unit. And that unit wound up at Fort Meade, Maryland by the time I got there, and worked for 25 years. Actually, I think about 27. And it started in the mid-60s. And continued on.
Now, earlier you briefly mentioned that anyone really has the ability to do this. Take us through how, you know, what is the process if one wanted to get started? What would be the basics, I guess you could say, in a short amount of time, if you could tell us?
In a short amount of time, it's hard, but let me give a caveat first, okay? When you look up remote viewing on the internet, you're going to get all this psychic stuff. And that's not what we did. The minute it came out in the papers, psychics said, oh, remote viewing, this works, so we're going to call ourselves remote viewers. The controlled remote viewing that was used by the military is actually a process where your subconscious mind has some psychic ability, it really does. And you train it to put that into your body. And then on a conscious level, you read your body. And it acts, your body acts as a translator between the subconscious and conscious. You start out by this long process of learning. We say land, and most people will draw a flat line. We say water, and they'll draw a wavy line. And you do that until it becomes second nature. And then they give you a target locked in a sealed envelope. You don't know what it is. And they say, okay, this is target number 5. Describe it. And your hand goes like this, because you have trained it to do so. It's a martial art. It really is a martial art. And you look at it and you say, well, I don't know what the target is, but look, I know that there's some land and some water. And oh, here's my, it's called an ideogram for something man-made. I don't know what the target is, but there's land, water, and man-made. You open the envelope and here's a ship sitting on the ocean. And you know, and they say, okay, here's a man-made, you got that right. Here's water, you got that right. There's no land, you got that wrong. They give you a score, they put it into the database, and you keep on going. Over hundreds of targets, by the things you do get and you don't get, they find out what your strengths are, what your weaknesses are. And let's say you're really good at colors, but you're not good at shapes. Fine. They will find another viewer who's good at shapes. And they'll ask you about the colors. They'll ask them about the shapes. And in doing that, using a team like that, through databasing and finding track records, they can come up with accuracy rates in the 90%.
Wow, that's fascinating. Now, you can actually, using this, travel forwards and backwards through time. Is that correct?
Oh, time's the easiest thing, yeah. Uh-huh. That's easier than forward and backward in space.
Now, that being said, can you actually affect things that are in the past or the future?
Yes. There's not a large effect, but the answer is yes. There have been experiments that have shown that we can affect things. Yeah. Uh-huh. It's not magic and big, huge things, but the easiest thing to actually affect is human decisions. So we have a target who is a human. We can persuade them to do what we want. We can't make them do what we want. That's a big thing. But we can, over time, persuade them to do what we want. Yeah.
Now, do you think we're also living in a reality where there is, I guess, multiple timelines or versions of reality that we can also access this way?
My personal belief is maybe, but I don't care. I'm having enough trouble dealing with this one. And so I really don't care, you know. Now, when it comes to the future, that's one thing that we have found very useful for one particular type of the remote viewing called associative remote viewing. For example, I say, okay, the Cowboys are playing the Saints, okay? And I want to place a bet, okay? I say, I don't know who's going to win, but tomorrow night, if the Cowboys win, I'm going to eat steak. If the Saints win, I'm going to eat a pickle. Okay. You can tell I'm a Texan. Okay.
And I'm in Louisiana. That's very funny.
I tell you, yeah. And so what I do right now is I sit down and I mentally move to tomorrow night and I go, you know, remember, this is a martial art. You tell your body. And I go, oh, that's sour. Oh, so I go bet on the Saints. I may root for the Cowboys, but I'll bet on the Saints.
Very cool. Now, going back to your military involvement, you were originally, I guess, recruited to the DTS unit, which eventually became Project Stargate. Is that right?
It was always DT-S. That was the official thing. The project itself that we worked on wound up being Stargate. There were actually 7 different projects, and what happened was every time somebody found out what we did, found out about the project, and you know, secrets leak all the time, and anybody started, you know, talking about it or anything like that, they would say, oh, we got rid of that project. They would cancel our project right there. The next day, we would go to work, and they would say, you're working on a new project. And they'd hand out different stamps for classification and say, you're working on this project now. We would just keep right on going. And so it wound up being Project Stargate.
Can you tell us about your first, I guess, actual remote viewing mission, if possible?
Yeah, the first time I tried it in the unit, it was called what's called a beacon exercise. They would they had this box of envelopes, and they would have 2 of the people come in and at random select one of the envelopes, go get in a car, and drive off out of sight, you know. Once they got out of sight of the building, they would open the envelope and find out where they were supposed to go. And so then they would go there, and we would give them time to get there, and then we would have the remote viewer view where they are. And that's what they did for me for my first one. And all the way through it, I said, I'm just getting people looking out a car window and looking and talking. And come to find out, the place where they were sent was a city park. And so they told me, well, sorry, you missed the target. And the people came back, and they were supposed to take pictures of the park to give me feedback when I got back. When they came back, they said, we never found the place. We drove and drove and kept looking out the window and never found the place. And so I said, yeah, I got it.
Nice. What about your first overseas target?
Actually, well, that was the Terry Waite thing when I first started actually doing. I did a lot of overseas practice targets. I did a lot of practice targets on overseas things that were already solved. But my first active one was the Terry Waite capture. And by that time, I had learned to do the remote viewing to the point where they would actually trust me to, you know, do work where somebody's life may depend on it. And that was the first one.
Can you describe that incident?
No.
Okay.
Sorry. I still don't know how much of what we found there was still classified. So I'm sorry.
Very interesting. Now, are there any missions that you can talk about from that particular time?
Oh, sure. We did Grenada. We did a lot of, one of my strengths is in the science and technological area. And so we did a lot of targets on, I was used in a lot of targets on military development, equipments development, such as that. And also just actually by accident, we had a new guy coming in to the unit, and he came in on Friday. And so they were going to introduce him to what we do. So they had those of us who were in the unit sit down and say, and the task was, what's going to be the headlines in the paper this weekend? And I got a nuclear meltdown of humongous proportions and all that. Well, that weekend, there was anything like that in the newspaper headlines. And so I was wrong. But 2 days later, the news broke that Saturday or that, you know, that weekend, Chernobyl had melted down. And so I had not only found out that there was going to be a meltdown, I found out in that session what had caused it, what, you know, all the details about it and all that, and had a good session. But we were always to do our tasking. And so even though I got all those details and predicted the Chernobyl meltdown, it didn't show up in the papers that weekend, and so I still got a zero. It's military. That's the way the military works.
Right. Now, earlier you were talking about how you basically fried out the computer, and you mentioned the movie The Men Who Stare at Goats, and I was watching that the other day. I'd like to know how much of that is actually based on events from your life. And was the Lynn Cassidy character loosely based on you?
Loosely, yeah. The plot of the movie was made up, okay? The events all the way through the movie actually happened. But they happened over 25 years to a whole host of people. And so they made up this plot, and they put the events according to how they fit into that plot. And so all of the events that happened, even the killing of the goat, those were real. They happened. The whole thing of Lynn Cassidy going, you know, there and getting lost in the desert and everything, that was all movie plot.
Wow, very interesting. Now, can you tell us about remote influencing and if you yourself have ever done it to a person or anything besides a computer system?
Oh, yeah. Remote influencing is just that. It's not remote control. It's remote influencing. You can influence things. It's much easier to influence people and their decisions. It takes a lot of repetition. It is persuasion. It should be called remote persuasion. But have I done that? Absolutely. The story goes that I persuaded Gorbachev to end communism. That's not true. Gorbachev was planning all along to end communism, and he was having problems in how to put it. And the situation came about where I basically was tasked to see what I could do. And I kept doing the remote persuasion thing, and come to find out, the speech that he made to end the communism had every phrase in it that I had been persuading. And so that was feedback, you know. But did I convince him to do that? No, he was planning to do that anyway, you know.
Now, what about the story that you made Saddam Hussein sick? Now, is that true?
And myself as well. Oh, man, I was sick.
Wow.
Yeah. There was a period of time where Saddam Hussein just disappeared for about a week. I was at lunch one day and over at the golf course, and these guys came up and walked into the cafeteria where I was, and you can spot the men in black a mile away if you know what you're looking for. And they came in and they sat down and were looking at me, and I thought, I'm out of here. I got up and left, and when I did, they left with me, and they guided me over to their car. I got in. We drove around the base for a while, and they were asking me to see if I could kill him, you know. And I said, no, I don't kill. I don't do that. And period. Zero. No. And so anyway, they took me back to my car and let me out. And just sort of to stick it to the guys, because I don't like them, I leaned over and looked in the window and said, but I'll bet you I can make him sick. And I turned around and walked off. And I got home that evening and I thought, I wonder if I really could. And so I started trying it. And over the next week, oh, you talk about throwing up. I mean, sick as a dog, I was. And he disappeared for a week. And when I finally said, it's not worth it, just quit. And I got better. And all of a sudden, he appeared again.
Why do you think it made you sick as well?
I didn't know how to do it at the time. I didn't know how to protect myself. I have since learned how to do that.
Now, are you also able to remotely move objects?
It's a very minor thing. I wouldn't even say move them. But yeah, you can cause some motion. You know what a radiometer is?
Yes.
Yeah, it's one of those things that you set in the sun and it starts spinning around.
Right.
If I try hard for quite a while, I can make that thing start spinning. I can make it start moving. Can't get it spinning. But yeah, it's a human capability. If I were to practice it and train in it, I'm sure I could. But that's another thing where, you know, I don't care. I mean, why bother?
Right. Now, after your involvement with the military, is it right that you were contacted by different factions or organizations to remote view extraterrestrials?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Can you talk about a little bit of that, please?
I knew you were going to say that.
of course.
There have been incidents, and there have also been honest, actual investigations in it. Where I've been asked to do the work, and I've done the work, and I've gotten feedback on a lot of it too. I mean, actual proof type feedback with success. And yeah, they're out there, and in fact, they're coming here. It's real.
When you say they're coming here, are you talking like some sort of invasion scenario?
Oh no, no, it's. This has nothing to do with the remote viewing, but after the service, I was asked by an agency to do an assessment of alien psychic ability versus human psychic ability. And they allowed me to see all of the stuff that should have gotten into Project Blue Book, but never did. It was held back and all that. And I got to see all of that stuff and study it. And I did some remote viewing, but mostly it was studying the stuff. And I was able to write a paper that cut the aliens into four divisions psychic-wise, okay? There are those who are psychic more than we are, and those who are not psychic, especially, you know. They're in those two groups, there's friendly and unfriendly. And I found that the unfriendly psychic ones don't tend to come here. They don't like us. They don't want to come here. Besides, we have weapons that can shoot them down anyway. So, the friendly non-psychic ones come here for trade and very active in that. The friendly psychic ones want us to become psychic and develop our abilities. The non-friendly psychic ones want our planet just raised to the ground, just kill us all, get rid of us all. And I couldn't figure out why the psychic ones were wanting to help us and wanting to get rid of us. And there was one incident that I won't go into that never made it into the Blue Book and all that finally revealed the reason why. And that is because the psychic aliens have more psychic ability and more psychic strength than we do. But you see the saucer coming in, you know, and all this, and it gets right over you, and all of a sudden you're captured, you're psychically frozen and all this. The thing that I finally understood was that they have strength, but they don't have any range. They have to be right there over you. Now, in remote viewing and in remote influencing, we have range we can see across the universe as easily as we can see across the room. We are weak, but we have tremendous range, unlimited range, in both time and space. And they have the strength, but no range in space, and no range in time either. And so if we develop our psychic abilities, when the time comes that we move out into the universe, we will be a major power in the universe. And that's why our friends want to help us do that. And that's why our enemies just want to kill us. And so anyway, that was the summary of the paper that I turned in. That paper has since sort of gone the way of everything in that long warehouse that Indiana Jones stuff got into. I kept a copy of it somewhere. It was not classified at the time that I wrote it. But anyway, that was the report I gave. And it has evidently been taken seriously. So,
how many races would you say are, I guess, interested in our planet or even involved with it?
I think many. I don't know how many there are. There are three that I absolutely know of.
Would you be able to describe those races at all? Is one of them the Greys?
Oh, yes, absolutely. One of them is the Greys. Another one that I've seen is a large, like 7 foot tall, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, muscled up and all that. Zero brain ability. I mean, you say hello to these guys, they'd be stuck for an answer. But they sort of work as minions of the Greys. And there's another type that is sort of insectoid, looks insectoid. Now, as far as the Nordics or whatever, I've heard of those, never seen one that I know of. But I've had physical, actual contact with the others through incidents and missions.
So I guess you could say through incidents, I guess you would say through remote viewing incidents or astral?
Actual incidents, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. So you've had abduction experiences?
I did have one abduction experience, and that did come out in the background studies and all that, you know. But let's leave it at that. Okay.
Now you've viewed a few alien bases here on Earth. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you've talked about one in Australia before, right?
The one in Australia seems to be the entry point for friendlies coming here. It's in Mount Zeal, somewhere around Mount Zeal in I think northern Australia, and. That seems to be the entry point where they come in, and then whatever they're going to do on Earth, they go out from there. Interestingly enough, when we found that out, our director at the time had a old friend of his who worked in an office in northern Australia there. He called him and he said, "What's going on out there?" And the guy said, "Nothing here in the out here, you know, there is nothing going on here. It is totally boring, the worst boring job I ever had. If it weren't for all those UFOs coming in and out of that mountain, we wouldn't have anything to do." So I guess that was some feedback.
Now, do you think that we will one day have communication with these beings again? You know, it seems like ancient accounts from the past, we were communicating with some of these extraterrestrials quite often. And it seemed that stopped at some point. Do you think that we may see that again in our future?
Oh, I think we have communications with them now, but it's more government controlled as far as the public. I don't really think that's going to be an issue anymore to a great extent. They're basically abducting cows and horses now.
Well, would you say that we do have factions of our government that working with some of these branches of ETs?
Oh, yeah.
Very interesting. And, you know, the accounts that you hear of our secret space program, do you think it's developed to where we actually have off-planet operations?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. Now, have you ever
word answers? But
have you ever remote viewed any other planets or life on other planets?
Oh yeah, mm-hmm, yeah. Well, we got tasked on those several times. Now, I need to give you a caveat here. We were never officially tasked by the U.S. government or military to do ET or alien targets. That's worded very carefully. We were never officially tasked to do that by the U.S. government or military.
Now, are you able to talk about any of the off-planet views that you have done? If you've done sure. Like the Mars or the Moon or anything like that?
Yeah, one of the things, you've seen the pictures of the face on Mars. I forget the name of the location there. But before that picture was taken, as far as I know, I was tasked to do that, and I found myself in a pyramid type structure with some very highly degenerated other beings, de-evolved. And anyway, I came to an opening in that building and I looked out and realized that I was in a place, stone sloping back and going up to a point. And I looked out and the sun was very dim and saw these structures, you know, all broken down and everything else. And anyway, it was about a year later that I was out in California at a place and actually saw that picture. And you know how we can read license plates from 250 miles up, you know, through the atmosphere, and they can't get a picture of a mountain on Mars? Come on, you know. And I saw the picture that was highly detailed. And I looked at this pyramid, and there's that little opening that I was looking out of, and I remembered. And I remembered where all the buildings were. And so sort of I wanted to get a T-shirt saying Mars, been there, done that, didn't get a T-shirt.
Is Mars the furthest planet you've viewed?
No. Mm-mm, no.
What would you say the furthest out you've been?
Actually, Saturn was the one that we know of. Now, I have been tasked... After the military, I have been tasked by space research people to view, I forget the name of the star system, but it's, I think it's 6.4 light years from here or something like that, the planetary system there. And that was before they were actually finding planets, you know, from the wobble of the star. And so we found basically, I think, 5 planets there. One was inhabited. And we did an area book on the inhabitants. Do you know what an area book is?
No, well, I guess not when it comes to that.
Okay. for diplomats, the State Department provides an area book when they're going to send a diplomat to a foreign country. It tells the customs, the religion, the habits, the idiosyncrasies and all that, the language, everything else. And the diplomat studies that so they don't go over and make some stupid mistake that's going to start a war. And the company that hired me, I don't know what their plans are, but their thought was, what if we send an astronaut there and they go make some mistake that starts an interplanetary war? And so they wanted an area book. And so we created an area book on this one civilization, their habits, their religion, their economics situation, their everything in their life. And we did a full, complete study on that civilization.
Do you think disclosure will ever come from our own government?
Not from the government. I think admission will come from the government. If disclosure came from the government, I probably wouldn't trust it anyway. But I think admission will come from the government, yeah.
Now, when it comes to our own abilities, psychic abilities, abilities to do remote viewing, it seems that, it's definitely been affected by our environment for many, many years. You know, our food, our water, and just the overall dumbing down. And the more you look at it, it seems that it's being done intentionally so that most people don't have access to these abilities. Would you agree?
I think they have access to them. But I think that the thing that dumbs us down to it more than anything else is social, religious pressures, and so on. And just the ridicule, derision, everything else. Basically psychic is a four-letter word. And that's a shame because there are some fantastic psychics out there that do accurate work. I mean, really good ones. But even still, when you say the word psychic, you know, a mental picture forms in everybody's head, and it's not a good mental picture, you know. this is why we have tried to explain to people that the controlled remote viewing, not remote viewing, but the controlled remote viewing, isn't based on being psychic at all. You don't go into trances. You don't do any of this stuff. It is a trained martial art. It really is, and it takes all the training of a martial art.
Now, when you're training somebody, how long would you say it takes for them even to just get down the basics?
Actually, you've probably heard of the 100th monkey theory, where enough monkeys learn to do something, it's easier for the next monkey to learn it. It's actually going very fast these days. Now, when I went into the unit, the projected learning period, working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, was it would take about a year to get me up to speed where they would trust me. It actually wound up mainly more because of international crises than anything else, that they started using me after about 6 months. But that was 6 months of training, 8 hours a day, 5 days a week. This is not an easy task. It's a martial art. And now we're having people on, within 2 or 3 days who are having beginning successes. They're not drawing maps or floor plans of buildings halfway around the world or giving high details, but they're showing accurate mental contact with the target in 2 or 3 days. It's amazing. You're muted.
Yeah. Would you say that you would need to be in, I guess, optimal health, no drugs, no toxins, to be able to do this better, to be able to access this a little bit better?
I'm glad you said better. Good health. They had done studies on us. I mean, we were guinea pigs from day one. They had done studies and found out that even aspirin can negatively affect your stuff. I mean, no drugs, no alcohol, period. It has an effect. It really does. If you want to be absolute tops in it, you learn the process and you stay clean.
Now, whenever you're teaching a student, mainly why are they coming to you to learn remote viewing? Is it just out of curiosity? Are they using this for practical applications? What are you experiencing?
Yeah, many of them come out of curiosity. Many of them come, I would say the largest number of them come because they've had what's called the White Crow experience. White Crow experience is an old psychological thing that says you can believe all you want that there's no crow that's not black. You know, that it's not possible to have a white crow. Once you see a white crow, you can no longer hold that belief. And so people go through life, all of a sudden, they have an experience, and it's a psychic experience, and they cannot deny it. And from that point on, they start looking for an explanation. We have a lot of people coming that way. We also have a lot of people who are socially concerned. They want to help bring home missing kids, things like that. And for them, I try to warn them that especially missing kids or solving crimes and all that when you view something like a missing kid or a crime, you're exposing your mind to something that it really doesn't want to be exposed to. And so, we have a lot of viewers who rush in where angels fear to tread, and they wind up just saying, I'll never do this again. You know, one in particular, I kept telling her, no, don't do police cases, not yet. Learn to protect yourself. We teach you how to protect yourself. And she rushed in, and the child had evidently been sexually molested, murdered, chopped up, with body parts spread, and she experienced that. Never saw her again. I understand people wanting to help and getting serious about helping, but you have to learn to protect yourself. And I would say a quarter of our training is not teaching you how to remote view, but how do you protect yourself from what you remote view?
And you've actually helped law enforcement and other organizations in locating missing persons, is that right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about any of the cases that you've helped with?
There was one where this cop had murdered his wife, and nobody was suspecting the cop. And we found out that it was the cop. The wife's body was not found. Through the remote viewing and all that, the body was found. There have been other cases where there have been murders, and they were looking for evidence. The police usually have great suspects. What they need is evidence. And so most often when you work for the police, you're not looking for the event itself. They already know the event happened. What you're looking for is the evidence to prove what they need to prove. And this, again, is one way to protect yourself. We tell the police, you know, don't tell us what you already know. Task us toward what you don't know. And that's almost always evidence.
And have you been able to locate like missing valuables, missing objects and things like that?
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's very interesting. Any other cases that you could talk about? One more maybe before we move on?
Several. There's a case pending right now. I can't really talk about it, but it's a missing person. The person has been missing for almost 18 years now, I think. We are 99% sure we found the body, because the body was never found. But the body is now under a structure, and they would have to take the structure down to get to it. And they're not going to do that. It worked out once we found that location, that they found out that that structure was being built when the person went missing, and was built immediately. You know, the ground stuff was laid immediately the next day and all that. So it's a high probability, but they're not going to do anything about it. Many times the evidence that we find, they may not be able to act on it. And there are other times, which is most frustrating, where somebody in their higher up chain of command will say, oh, that's them psychics, we're not going to throw that, and we'll throw them in the trash. There were two soldiers that went missing over in Kuwait. And they asked me to find the location of the soldiers. They had been abducted. Found the location. The unit commander was the one who had asked for it. He said, I know exactly where that is. They went there and found out that those two soldiers had been held hostage there the day before, but had been moved. And so the unit commander came back and said, can you find out where they've been moved to? We did the work as a team, found out where they'd been moved to, sent it through the chain of command, and some major along the way said, that's crazy psychic stuff, threw it in the trash. And about 6 months later, they found evidence of the body there. Bodies there.
Wow.
All he had to do was send it through. Come on. I mean, the commander asked for it. So I would love to see that. I would love to see that major drummed out of the service, period.
Yeah. Now, do you think more law enforcement organizations are utilizing remote viewers and people like yourself than they let on?
Yeah. They have come to take it seriously. And in fact, when all of this first came out, I was getting requests for radio interviews and things like that. And they were always making jokes and fun of it. And, you know, oh, well, prove it to me and all this other stuff, you know. And they're not doing that anymore. Because people have all of a sudden, I think society as a whole has found its white crow in event. And they're learning, you know, that we can do it.
Yeah, it definitely seems that society as a whole is waking up to a lot of things and beginning to accept things more that are coming out from behind the scenes.
Yeah. Well, so is science. The researchers have been actually finding that this stuff works. And nowadays, it's not a thing of a scientist risking his reputation and his livelihood for studying this. So,
do you think there are still factions of our government that utilize this? I mean, there seems to be so much benefit for it. I don't see why they wouldn't be.
I have two standard answers for that. Okay. People ask me, are they still using it? My first standard answer is that that I'm not a spokesman for the military or the government. And if you want that information, you should ask the Office of Public Affairs. And I shut it off in that direction. The other answer is, like you said, they'd be crazy not to. But that changes the question. Does our government ever do anything crazy or not? So, you know, it would be stupid not to, but do they ever do anything stupid? So the fact is, I don't know the answer. When you retire, they quit telling you things.
Now, there are so many benefits for this. I understand that there also may be some health benefits that can be used from this.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. The remote persuasion, especially. We teach the Inga Swan method. A man named Inga Swan discovered this method. The Inga Swan method leads into remote persuasion. And the remote persuasion, we are absolutely adamant about the fact that we do not cure anybody. Okay. For one thing, it's against the law if you're not pharmaceuticals, okay, or a doctor. The other is that we honestly don't. However, we can access someone at the subconscious level, find out what's causing them to make themselves sick, and we can persuade them out of it. They have problems, we can work them through it at the subconscious level so that those problems get solved. This is psychological illness, emotional illness, physical illness, whatever. And we have found that we can help people in that way. It's a lengthy, lengthy process. Very lengthy process. I mean, you're talking sometimes hundreds of sessions. But it works, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very good. That was absolutely fascinating, Lynn. Before you head out, let everyone know where they can find their work and get signed up for some remote viewing classes.
Okay. My website is crviewer.com, crviewer.com. If you want a book, I hate people who hawk their books. The book is The Seventh Sense, and by me, and it's through Amazon and through different booksellers and all that, but it tells what we did in the unit and all that. The website has practice targets that you can try on your own. We do not track anybody for any reason. I hate it when people track me. I don't track them. And so we have over 450 practice targets you can try, and so on. And all kinds of information about the remote viewing itself. And on the front page now is links to our online training.
Very good. Well, Lynn, thank you so much again for tonight. That was fascinating stuff. And I'd like to have you back on again in the future.
Sure, no problem. Thank you for inviting me.